Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Monday and New Year, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com, a very happy New Year, everybody. I hope you had as nice a Christmas and New Year and Kwanzaa, and anything else you were celebrating over the last, since we were gone, right? Since we've been gone. And I don't know. I don't know if we're going to, may have taken an extra couple of days too much, right? There's a certain sweet spot when you take time off, right? And you get to a point where you're like, I don't know if I'm ready to go back, as opposed to, you know, the little brief freshening. Happy, though, to, as I just tweeted, in anticipation of coming back, for those that may have forgotten that we were coming back. And as I said to Case a couple of minutes ago, we're probably lucky. Casey had to come back from the islands, from the Bahamas. almost didn't get home this morning from his little vacation. Of course, Case has got to work all, you know, he's still pushing buttons during the week when we're supposedly off. So thanks to Case for that. And I know that I guess there was a couple of little double repeats, I guess, during last week that Sirius actually, I think, had a hiccup or two. It's always interesting. You get the occasional note from people during vacation, you know, that something they hadn't heard. And given that a big part of, not the biggest part, but a good portion of the morning and probably the next couple of days will be devoted to tributes to Billy Turner, I know that the response the other day to got a bunch of emails about the Numi show and people. And Case said he got calls too, people that hadn't heard it back in October. So hope you kept busy, and certainly there was plenty of ways to stay informed and entertained and to play and bet, and lots to discuss. We'll, you know, no rush, obviously, to get to everything, but there's obviously a handful of major headlines when it comes to the action on the racetrack and the news off the track. And I mention Billy Turner first and foremost because while everybody understood how dire things were for Billy and that, you know, there was going to be an end point sooner than later, it still just brought a wave of sadness, because when it comes to Seattle Slough being one of those horses that is a touchstone for people, one of those horses that you hear people mention as, you know, the horse that got them going and you know, they latched onto, and of course, you know, during an incredible period when you think about the 70s and what they produced with Slough and Affirmed and Secretariat and Spectacular Bid and everything else, because you know, everybody focuses on the Triple Crown horses, but a rich, rich decade. And Slew's story and Billy's, they're not simple, frankly, when it comes to what transpired after the Triple Crown. But that shouldn't be the overriding portion of an appreciation for Billy Turner's career and life, because everybody that knew him and have come out forward with appreciations and tributes just talk about what a gentleman and how kind and thoughtful and accomplished as a horseman and the breadth of his success certainly goes far beyond Slew. And again, I'll let some people, Rich Migliori will be on in an hour, and Rich certainly has a long, career-long relationship with the Turners. And, of course, we need to send our love and thoughts to Pat, who's been by Billy's side forever. And she doesn't have specifics yet about when there'll be services and so forth, and some kind of ceremonies, but we'll pass them along as they come forward. And anybody that I know that she certainly would welcome anyone who wants to express their appreciation and respects. She'd certainly welcome them. The tendency, I think, unfortunately, with what went on with Seattle Slew and the way in which the post Triple Crown difficulties arose, and the ongoing element of what seems like and what has been characterized as something of a snub and a slight of Billy Turner for the Hall of Fame. You don't want those to overwhelm the discussion, but it's impossible not to at least acknowledge those portions. Seattle Slew's career, and specifically Turner's recognition of his talent and the handling to get him through the Triple Crown undefeated. At that time, an added accomplishment to the Crown exploits. So we'll let Rich talk about being around Belmont Park for many years with Billy Turner, who really he retired at what, 75 probably, and really did not get to enjoy the discovery of the injury, the neck injury in the back, and all the things. He really had it tough these last few years. And that's sad. 81. There's some horses that'll come up, I'm sure, in conversation that are going to fit that characterization. I call the horses the time forgot Well, two of them in particular, Gaviola, and given when I started to really come regularly to the racetrack, Gaviola was just spectacular, and a horse that goes back more toward Slew's era. Gaviola, I think, is recent enough that people remember her. But Zarevich, if you haven't either refamiliarized yourself or if you haven't looked, here's a horse you never hear mentioned. And his career was unbelievable. He was 8-for-13 with 5/3. And those thirds were to, State Dinner, Winter's Tale, Affirmed. Zarevich, who won the Met, won the Carter, won the Jerome, the Withers. This is a horse you never hear mentioned when people talk about that era. And he faced just all kinds of greats in his career. Won that Met in 1980. Fascinating. I there's a horse. This is the year we're going to do that segment. The Horses Time Forgot, and Zarevich, son of Nijinsky. Had one start actually on the grass too. Ran third to Green Tree's bowl game in the Man of War in '79. So Turner Punchline, another later in his career success for Billy Turner. There's nothing but effusive praise to be brought forward when talking about Billy Turner. Got to bring in the on-track activities, and in about 8 minutes at 9:20, John Sadler will join us. I had to have Sadler as the first guest of 2022. That was sort of established, I think, pretty clearly on Boxing Day. Santa Anita opened the season not without some challenge and not without some difficulty. The off-the-turf situation that brought the American Oaks and the Mathis and the San Gabriel had to come off the turf opening day, which was really too bad. But the concern or the consternation about that, frankly, once the race day was done, it pretty much had been accepted and moved on from there. The racing's been good, and there's been some terrific performances. None captured the imagination and fancy like Flightline. Focus on Flightline quite a bit, because with John Sadler's visit, Sadler will talk about him and the future, what he and the partners, what they imagine going forward. And obviously, this is a supremely fast horse. I mean, the names being invoked include, Go Zapper-esque. Sadler made the decision early in the year that he was going to really be cautious and careful with Flightline, and it paid off with the Malibu win, obviously. See where it goes. The Sadler seems ready to. He was with Mike Willman yesterday. You may have seen Ray Pollock sent out a couple of tweets summarizing what John said yesterday to Mike on Thoroughbred LA. And we'll get expanded thoughts from Sadler on Flightline. And then in hour three, David Ngordo is going to join us. And not only will we discuss Flightline and buying, you know, the purchase and, you know, setting a, you know, setting a goal or setting a price and knowing that you're going to, you know, bring home a horse like Flightline, no matter what the ticket, you know, and, you know, people say, well, for $1 million. Yeah, but there was somebody that was, there was somebody at 950, you know, there were other people that were either deterred or, you know, just had set a budget and weren't going to go, you know, one more bit to bring Flightline into their fold. And so I wanted David to talk about it, and I wanted him to address a little bit the what is obviously now this era of mega partnerships. And David does, you know, David works for a variety of clients, not, you know, not just the kind of group that, that came together on Flightline, but, you know, individuals as well, obviously, plus some personal success. It was a fabulous year for wife, Cherie DeVoe. And David and Cherie have got at Belladonna Racing, and Cherie had a really next step kind of a season. And in fact, this week, one of the things I absolutely want to include in conversation is a kind of a look back at last year. Given that people are, they struggle to some degree with these mega stables and with the biggest outfits. Last year was a very good year for emerging horsemen and fledgling trainers getting started. There a lot of them, and I think maybe more than people realize. And as I was sort of going through, you know, last year's, I was trying to pick some best of type material for last week. It really kind of, you know, stuck, caught my eye. So we'll do some of that. I want to assemble a full list. And in fact, you know, the other day when Seafoam won the Alex Robb in New York, Michelle Giangiulio, she's one of those names that, you know, that emerged over the course of the year. Gary Brion on the chasing side, right? There's been a lot. So I'm going to celebrate those. So David Ngordo later. Kelly Breen. Want to get Kelly in. Crevassier. Wins the Jerome. Another Tappet. So among the conversations this morning. In addition to the Malibu win, which we're a cup just a minute or two away from John Sadler joining us, Flavian Pratt aboard. Pratt and Johnny V pretty much dominating the, you know, the early stages of the Santa Anita season in a big way. Johnny quickly establishing himself and, of course, riding seemingly first call for the Baffert barn. The Baffert with a steady parade of maiden winners, both, you know, two-year-olds, now three, and older, that Shaz that won was super impressive. Obviously, took a long time to get to the races, and there was also a filly, too, that Distracted Princess the other day that had a bunch of interruptions, seemed ready for starts at various points, and never just, you know, finally got a chance to debut and wins at First Asking. But Johnny all over the place. The sham win with Newgrange. There was some two-year-olds in the opening week. Wharton, McLarenville, Flying Drummer. Unbelievable. Gunrunner. Gunrunner's like a rash. He's everywhere. It's unbelievable how many Gunrunners just winning, winning early, winning often, to say the least. Beside Flightline, and in fact, Case, why don't you reach for John? We'll get Sadler in here. And speaking of Baffert and Velasquez, Calypso. And boy, I kind of stubbed my toe in that La Brea. And let's be honest, the La Brea came up weak when you look at the numbers. But boy, one of my favorite things is three-year-olds that miss a portion of the year and come back. She didn't even have to come back and be all that much better than she'd been, frankly, to win that La Brea, as it turned out. But missed her completely, frankly. Express Train. How about the San Antonio winner? Express Train. That was a good race. John Sheriffs and Victor Espinoza. Lots of results to wade through. And in addition, of course, to the win on opening day for Flightline and John Sadler. There was also yesterday, right? Came back and a nice kind of a snapback performance for Edgeway yesterday in the Kalukan Queen, the competitive edge mare. So we'll talk about that with John as well, and don't want to go too far afield before he joins us. A couple of others. The off the turf stakes beside the three main track races, that Queen Goddess and Michael W. McCarthy takes two of the off the turf stakes. And that, you know, one thing, when we talk to Hammer later in the week, we gotta talk about the Graded State Committee. This was a little surprising, to be honest. The they maintained the Grade One designation for that Oaks. I was surprised at that decision. But it's good for Queen Goddess, obviously. And in the Mathis Mile, you had law professor for McCarthy and Bob and Jackie for Richard Baltus in the San Gabriel off the turf. I think I hear in the background John Sadler.
Good morning.
John, good morning. Happy New Year to you and the team.
Thank you.
Well, you certainly got the year off to a flying start, even before the calendar turned. The flight line performance, John. I don't know how much time you spent on the internet, you know, subsequently, but the excitement that it generated, just spectacular.
Yeah, it really was. It was a great race, great day. Obviously, you know, the numbers are kind of unmatched anywhere, so and you didn't need numbers to watch, you know, to appreciate that. You just had to watch it run.
And we'll talk about the, you know, the historic nature of the performance. But first and foremost, just talk about handling him, because you were very deliberate about what you were going to do with him from early on in the year.
Well, yeah, you know, he's such a horse, you know. You know, we're always decided that we're going to do exactly what's best for him. You know, not put the calendar ahead of the horse, or put the horse ahead of the calendar. And, you know, the hard decision was, did we run in the Breeders' Cup Sprint off two races, or did we wait for the Malibu with straight three-year-olds? And we decided to wait for the Malibu. and looked like a good decision.
Well, to say the least, and you know, there's the saying that you know the slow ones don't get hurt. When you talk about handling him, and you know, we know, you know, there was the hind end incident that delayed getting him to the races, but you know, talk about essentially recognizing and maybe even in anticipation of him arriving, you know, understanding, you know, just how much potential this horse had and how to, you know, how to handle that in a way that was going to give him a chance to show himself on the racetrack, because horses like this, they, you know, when they're this fast, they tend to get hurt.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's, you know, we gave him all, you know, at every level, you know, he's been gotten all the time that he needs, you know, when he got the big scar on his butt. You know, there's just no shortcutting, you know, it's just old-fashioned horsemanship every step of the way. And that's what we've done with him. Excuse me, I've got a little bit of a cough. but that's, you know, so it's just been, you know, one step at a time, and we're going to enjoy the journey as we go forward.
Well, the debut, which had people, you know, instantly back in April excited, and then you made it clear you were going to wait for the summer and be conservative, came back with, I mean, just the jaw-dropping effort at Del Mar, and then the anticipation of Boxing Day and the opening day performance. It's interesting, yeah. John. It's interesting to me that, you know, some of us were—I won't say playing against him, but there was a lot of handicapping discussion that, you know, he still has to go out and do it against some good horses. I mean, what was your thought going in?
My thought going in was, you know, it wouldn't be close. He'd wipe them out. I'll be honest with you, but you know, you don't want to say too much because that's not good luck. So you just keep your trap shut and say there's a bunch of good horses in there and do your dutiful duty.
Well, it wasn't in doubt. It was pretty clear down the backstretch and heading into the turn, the, you know, the way things were unfolding, and wins by 11 eased up, a figure that we don't see too often anymore in this era, a 118 buyer, and I think I saw where Jerry Brown said that he paired up on Thoroughgraph, ran another negative five essentially, and you know, the term generational talent gets thrown about pretty often, but you know, John, what's the upside here, and I know you were with Mike Willman yesterday and had some thoughts about the immediate future. Talk a little bit about, you know, how you want to basically give this horse every chance to, you know, to do what he is capable of.
Yeah, I mean, he should get better, you know, as he matures a little bit more. When they're late getting started like this, they, you know, I would expect him to, you know, improve as he goes along. Hold on here just one second.
Sure.
John, go 5/8 by himself. He's got a mic. I want Jelani and Lopez to go 5/8 together. Lopez on the inside. Why don't you let the team go first? And then the gallopers are on the training track.
Now I'm ready. I'm driving a golf cart, giving instructions, clocking horses, and drinking the tea.
That's Clocker's Corner on a winter morning. Okay, you got it. You have to go over and get a croissant egg sandwich from Rosie, and it'll be a complete day.
Yeah, haven't done that yet. I'm just we're just headed out to the track.
I love
it. But you know, we're gonna enjoy the flight line and you know, just be deliberate, you know, because he deserves that because he's so good. You want to be fair, so that's what we're going to do.
You talked about, you know, getting him to a mile and a 16th, and
yep.
lay out how, you know, how many times you think you would run him as the 4-year-old season unfolds.
Yeah, well, we definitely want to be at the Breeders' Cup, obviously, and either the Whitney or the Pacific Classic. Met Mile is on our list for sure. So there's a few little blanks to be filled in, but we'll just take it, you know, one day at a time, and we'll know more as we go along.
John, it's a group that you know, really brings together. It's really an interesting assembly that is the partnership here with Costa, of course, and Hieronis, Sienna Farm involved, breeder Jane Lyon, Summer Wind, and of course out of the nice
right.
Indian Charlie,
West Point Thoroughbred.
Yep,
Lane's End. So it's a good group. They were all here for opening day, so that was fun. You know, it was fun for, you know, Mrs. Lyons to come in from the East Coast and see him run. So I imagine we'll have everybody at every race going forward.
Well, speaking of West Point, my phone tells me that it's Terry Finley's birthday, so be sure to send him a missive.
Very good. Happy birthday, Terry.
You can score some points among the West Point training community. well, John, that kind of a campaign that you know, would feature some historic type races for a Tappet colt, that'll be appointment opportunities, and I think people would, obviously the excitement here was very palpable. How much more growing do you think he's got to do?
He's not going to grow that much more. He's going to get just bigger and stronger, you know, as they go into midway through next year. So, you know, it's a big horse already, so he'll just get stronger, I believe.
Well, John, in addition, we'll save Flightline conversations for down the road. David Ngordo is going to join us actually in hour 3, so we'll get a little bit more the backstory from David. You've had a nice, you know, first, you know, what, 10 days plus, and that included getting Edgeway back in the winner's circle yesterday in the Caloocan Queen.
Yeah, wasn't that great? She's one of my favorites, obviously. She ran a great race in the Breeders' Cup. We were, you know, thrilled with her race there. And, you know, it wasn't necessarily the plan to start her back this early in the year, but she came out of it so good. I said, let's give her a little run here just to check her out. And she just galloped around there yesterday.
Very much so. Nice. And, of course, the filly and mare sprint division certainly can use some talent.
Yeah, it's a good group. You know, you've got Cece, who's top class.
Yep.
She's training well, looking good. And I know all those fillies that kind of Four Graces, Bells, you know, there's a nice group out there. And there'll be more new shooters.
Speaking of new shooters, John, I want to ask you about, because I know you're going to want to watch those horses work, but I do want to ask you about the import from New Year's Day in the Joe Hernandez Bran, who I ended up picking and betting and ran okay. Tell us about
we really liked him, and he kind of caught us off guard because he didn't corner very well.
Yeah.
Had he run a little straighter, I think he would have won. Now, in the morning, he's been perfect, you know, but you don't kind of find out. Just to be a little, like, a bit change for his next race. This horse trained very well and ran well. I mean, you know, I thought we were going to win, but yeah, I think he got a little jacked up the first time and because he'd run at St. Cloud, and that's a left-handed turn. So we're a little surprised to see him just getting out a little bit, but you know, he'll settle down, and you know, obviously we wanted him for down the hill. They ran on the flat, but next time probably down the hill would be a good spot.
I was going to say, because it was moved. You know, there had been some weather, and the turf was listed as good, I think the opportunity down the hill, you know, which plays well for, you know, for horses that, you know, that are miler types, that, you know, and he's done a little, you know, six and a half. He's gone a mile, going all the way back to Longchamp. This is a gelding that looks like there's plenty of upside. Who found this horse?
Sean Duggan. She was over there and called me on him. He was in the Ark sale. And he either brought $80,000 or 80,000 euros. I'm hoping it's dollars. You know, he was reasonably priced.
Wow.
And it's fun to have him over here.
How about that? Nice. A nice acquisition. They don't all have to be seven figures or even six.
Yeah, they really don't.
John, the other horse that ran on New Year's Day that looks to me that she's got upside, that Park Avenue, you know, nobody was going to beat the winner, but it looks like Park Avenue is going to take a step forward.
Yeah, I think she's going to be real nice. I might have run her, in retrospect, I ran her back on 3 weeks. Maybe she needs a little bit more time than that. And nobody, like you said, nobody was going to beat the winner. But that's a nice filly. She's quality road. Now she's group stakes place. I mean, all upside for her. Steve, I'm going to have to cut you off.
No problem. Not a problem. John, happy, healthy. We'll talk soon. John Sadler, everybody. And I didn't think there was a bigger on-track story, obviously, this year, going into the end of the year and to start the season, than John and Flightline. So there we go. John Sadler, everybody. That Park Avenue... if you didn't see, as time goes by, I mean, she basically blew the doors off everybody. And, as I said, you know, nobody was beating her. So Park Avenue, and who was the other? Who's that other, the other filly? The Baffert had a second filly in there. Those, I think, were the two beside, as time goes by. Let me pull that out while we're doing that, going back to Saturday, right? Oh, Velvet Slippers. Yeah, she really didn't run well. She kind of chased the pace and ended up last. I thought this was an interesting group in the La Cañada, but as time goes by, went off by a dozen. Park Avenue set the pace and was able to hold second. That Moonlight Doro for Mandela ended up third in there. Saturday was fun. There weren't a lot of big balloons to be garnered, but it was a nice day of racing, and you know, caught the pick five, but it was chalky. That nightcap. How about there were two. I thought there were only two horses that could win that nightcap. That riding with Dino and Allegato, and boy, oh boy, that one. There were a couple of finishes right at Santa Anita on Saturday that could have easily been dead heats. What was there? Was it earlier? You know, you watch so many. Yeah, it was Chewing Gum and Beer Can Man. That's right, at the beginning of the pick five on Saturday, they were almost impossible to separate. Chewing Gum, the candy ride, 7-year-old, wins the Joe Hernandez. That was good. That was a good race as well. So we're still actually, it occurs to me, with that race having been, as we mentioned, with Bran, making the first start in North America, I think we go back to this one when they get a chance to come down the hill. We still haven't, right? Because opening day they took them off, and then this was taken off the hill to be put on the new chute, which has certainly come in handy. While we're looking at Saturday from Santa Anita, why not? New Grange, you know, I used McKinnon, Rockefeller, and New Grange, all three equally. And New Grange, you know, did figure to get the lead and was really never in doubt. When that 24 and change went up for the opening quarter, yeah, that was, there wasn't much doubt. Rockefeller chased and you know, made a little bit of a probe, but new graded stake winner for Violence. This colt was a fairly, you know, considering the stablemate Rockefeller, $750,000 for the SF Starlight agglomeration, reasonable purchase. New Grange, same ownership, the big bulky ownership, but $125,000 Keeneland Yearling, Jack Mendato, and Blackrock Thoroughbreds bred New Grange. And I did see a clever tweet actually before the race. Somebody, I should have saved that. And I should use that bookmark. I should use the bookmark system more often to save stuff like that. That Baffert, in terms of second time starters, first out winners, I think said what, that this was the third that had three. Sham, I can't remember. It had three sham winners in their second starts, and when I saw that, I realized, I liked the way Rockefeller won the Nashua. He didn't run badly in here, but New Grange. And I had the figure. Where'd the figure go? 88. And in fact, you know, the three 3 year old races from the weekend, in addition to the sham, the Jerome winner, we mentioned Courvoisier, and we'll talk to Kelly Breen. 73 there. And then Kenny McPeak with that Smarty Jones group. Dash Attack, Munnings with Davey Cohen at a square enough price, right? 7 to 1, I think. And I thought that race was just, to me, a complete scramble. I thought anybody could have won that. I ended up, I think I picked the Cox that finished fifth. Vivar, yeah, Vivar. Obviously a sloppy track, so you can't read too much into it. But Dash Attack, yeah, almost 8 to 1, paid $17.40. Munnings out of Heartspun Mare, and actually this is a homebred technically. There's some other partners, but Magdalena and Catalyst Stable. One thing that was, well, it's funny, Andy Serling and I were talking, and Andy said, did you notice something funny about the Smarty Jones? And I thought, you know, I'm trying to think of, you know, what could he mean? And I said, no, I didn't know. He said, how about when they turned for home and at the head of the stretch, you know, here's a horse in blue silks like Mrs. Chapman and her late husband, you know, Someday Farm, and a very, I mean, very similar, look, really looks a lot like Smarty Jones himself. It was very funny. And Andy said that I guess they were, I was watching on the laptop. I was watching the track feed, not the Fox show. And Andy said that both he and Lafitte were like, it's Smarty. Look, it's like Smarty Jones. And I realized afterward, yeah, that you're right. It did look like Smarty. The chestnut and the blaze and everything going on. So McPeak, obviously McPeak, just bringing them out in waves. This was a first-out winner, of course, at Oaklawn opening weekend. On the opening Sunday, so now 2 for 2, and he did take a nice little step forward, 82 buyer. So McPeak and partners, in addition to Catalyst, Kevin Pollard and Patty Slevin, in on Dash Attack. Barber Road ended up second in here. And you look at the chart, actually, and the top three finishers were all in the second half of the field, a half mile in. And, in fact, even further back at the three-quarter. So this one collapsed a little bit. The deep closers, given the wet track, the horses that were furthest back, they weren't able to make up any ground. In fact, you know, the horses that were... call it 9, 10, 12, yeah, 10, 11, 13. They were at the back half. Homebrew did not like the going. Went off, I think, his favorite. Yep, went off at 5-2. And Ben Diesel, you know, it's funny, Ben Diesel was a horse, the Dallas Stewart horse, that was outposted. I used him underneath because... I think he's got talent, but that was a big ask out in the, ended up being, after one scratch, ended up in the 13 hole. That's, you know, went off as the second choice, 9-2. So look for Ben Diesel later on. But Barber Road for John Ortiz. Nice second, score some points. On the road to the Southwest and the Rebel and the Arkansas Derby. Ignitus for D. Wayne was a good third in here at 30-1. So they're underway in earnest at Oaklawn. And, of course, after the Christmas break, they got back going. Hammer called me yesterday. Was it yesterday or Saturday? I think it was yesterday morning, and he was like, "Boy," he said, "the calendar turns to December." They told him, "Don't worry about December; it'll be nice." And he said, "Boy, as soon as January 1 rolled around in Hot Springs, man," he said, "it got cold." Pretty funny. They no training yesterday, but the track did not freeze. So they didn't have training, but they didn't lose. They didn't have to worry about, you know, the track freezing up. So they got the weekend in. I'll look forward to catching up with Hammer later in the week. Oh, and the calendars have arrived, and Hammer's going to start getting them out. And for you stragglers, if you haven't sent in your picture, any kind of a souvenir of anything. It doesn't have to be racing related. Could be, you know, Grand Canyon pennant, whatever. You name it. Any kind of souvenir. Take a picture and send it to oaklawncalendar@yahoo.com. Got a few more days, Hammer said. I think he's got 400, and he said he's got about 350. So there's room for another 50, 75 probably of you to, if you haven't ordered, not ordered, but requested your calendar for 2022. And, you know, I'm speaking of calendars. I this morning I had to take down one of my favorite calendars that just shows up in the mail, and I guess it's because I've got I'm on a mailing list for the Maryland breeders, and they do a great calendar that features the Maryland stallions, and it has all the sales laid out. And you know, sometimes there's some changes, but for the most part, it's a tremendous and very handy. It's always right to my eye, you know, my eye line, my eyesight, the Maryland calendar. But it also usually shows up about a week or two into the year, sometimes even a little bit longer. So I'm looking forward. And of course, you got an all ages sale next week. Speaking of sales, so got a couple of minutes to the top of the hour when Rich is going to join us. Let me get a couple of headlines in that we haven't touched on yet. Obviously, OnTrack flight line and Santa Anita is opening, but we'll talk more Billy Turner with Rich in a little bit. The other story that we're going to get to more in detail tomorrow. We'll do a little bit of a series of conversations. The news that came out regarding USADA and HISA and the fact that USADA seemingly walking away from their potential role as the contracted party as part of HISA and its authority. Tomorrow, Alan Forman will join us. Alan will explain, you know, what he thinks this means and how it came to be. And I know Chuck is going to stop by, Chuck Simon. Chuck has got some thoughts that he wants to offer as a horseman. And I think what could be characterized as misconception as to what USADA's, the couple of areas of this, what USADA's potential is, what their role was going to be. And that's a big part of this discussion. Sid's going to join us, I think, as well. The immediate reaction to this news going into Christmas weekend, it was that it was that the, you know, that oh, it's a catastrophe. If you had heard Alan and Eric Hamelback and Jay Pribman and Sid when we were in Arizona, I would have thought there'd be, you know, a wider understanding of what this meant and what it, you know, what the construct was here. It's very clear that the majority of people that are commenting on all of this and have drawn conclusions about what it means just hadn't really spent any time against what the statute, what the legalities of HISA is. USADA would have been a tail wagging the dog. HISA is the authority. They're the ones that make the rules and are going to administer, you know, if it passes legal muster. They're the ones who are quote unquote in charge. And I'm not sure. I suppose the jockey clubs messaging and you know, drum beating on USATA is partly responsible for why the reaction this news got, that that USATA can't reach an agreement with HISA. But it, what is clear here is that USATA wasn't and isn't in charge. They weren't going to be in charge. They were going to be basically a contract service when it came to the testing and, you know, the administration of that portion of the rules. I don't know why this was so difficult for people to understand, other than because maybe the Jockey Club didn't make it clear how this was going to work. There was a period where USATA was the centerpiece, but that was in previous, you know, going back to the other failed attempts to, you know, marshal it through Congress. The statute is written. HISA is what is important here. They're the ones that are going to basically, everybody wants a league office. Well, this is your league office that everyone is clamoring for. So I you know, USATA is a, you know, as they say in Quebec, a fonctionnaire. And there's plenty of mechanics available. And you know, tomorrow with Alan, we'll talk about it. You know, between a potential, you know, different contracted party, and maybe I talked to Alan about a revamped TRPB, you know, an investigatory, you know, boots on the ground type entity, and the regulators that are, you know, in place. I mean, the people, you know, somebody, I wrote something, you know, the morning after this news broke, saying that, you know, in a lot of ways, this could actually enhance, this news enhanced the HISA, the potential for HISA. Didn't hurt it. The opposite. I think HISA is more viable under this scenario. So we'll flesh a lot more of that out with Alan and Chuck Simon and Sid and more tomorrow, probably the second half of the show. And there's some pending news coming, from what I understand, too, from HISA, including the hiring of a full-time CEO and the staffing up. But the people who thought that this is some sort of a death knell to the concept, it isn't by any stretch. And there's a lot more, you know, there's a lot more to discuss on this front. So plenty other news, including the George Wolfe Award. We'll get to that and quite a bit more this week. Looking forward to Thursday, the opening of Sam Houston. We'll have Nick Tamaro, the voice of Sam Houston. Nick will be visiting on a regular basis. And we'll check in with Frank Hoff, I'm sure. Got to meet Frank face-to-face in Arizona. That was great. Got to get Erin Crady in here for TCA. This is she always visits first week because the auction, the big fundraiser Sunday for TCA. So plenty to do. Let's take the top of the hour break, though. And when we come back, Rich Migliore is going to join us. We'll check in with Mig. He'll talk about his relationship, long relationship, with Billy Turner. When we come back, plus hear how the Migliore family celebrated Christmas and New Year's and more. Back after this, hour two at the races. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions. In no state can match